It's time for Supply Chain Now Radio, sponsored by Apex Atlanta and TalentStream. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia, Supply Chain Now Radio spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the companies, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. Now, here are your hosts.
Hey, good afternoon. Scott Luton here with you live on Supply Chain Now Radio. Welcome to the show. Like all of our series on Supply Chain Now Radio, you can find all of our replays on a variety of channels from iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and of course our great partners over at Business Radio X. As always, we'd love to have you subscribe so you don't miss anything. So today's show is our latest installment in our Leadership Matters series, which is sponsored by the Effective Syndicate, a leading consulting firm that helps companies break through obstacles to establish bulletproof processes and teams that are built to win. So let's welcome in our featured guest today here on Supply Chain Now Radio, Bo Groover, founder and president of the Effective Syndicate. Bo, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you bet. Back from your world travels. And on that note, to our audience, Bo does travel all across the country as he and his firm works extensively across the end-to-end supply chain industry. He's in and out of a lot of companies, markets, sectors, you name it. And Bo and I were recently talking and had the idea, how neat would it be if Bo could share some of these lessons learned, some of these leadership observations and key takeaways from his travels on a regular basis. So Bo is up to the task, I believe, aren't you, Bo?
I think so. I'm ready.
Well, that's exactly what we're kicking off here today. So every couple of weeks, we're going to have Bo on the talk shop, share ideas from what he's been seeing, tips, tools, best practices, even some of don't do that, which we all need from time to time. So we promise you, our audience, that it's not going to be an infomercial. Heck, I hate infomercials. But we plan to regularly offer solid perspective that you and your organization stand to benefit from. So with that backdrop, we're going to bring Bo back in. And Bo, before we do anything else, I really want our audience to get to know you better. So if you're up for it, I want to ask you some personal questions.
Absolutely. Okay. Eager to share.
Okay. All right. First question. So where are you from and where did you grow up?
So I was born in Alabama. I was born in Huntsville, and I lived the first 14 years of my life in a medium-sized to small town called Anniston, Alabama. It's basically halfway between Birmingham and Atlanta. I left there, and I moved to Rocky Mount, North Carolina for a couple of years, and then Rock Hill, South Carolina for a couple of years, and then I moved to Athens, Georgia in 1989, and then I moved to Atlanta in 1991. So I'm a product of the Southeast for sure, but Atlanta is certainly my home.
Mm. So some great towns there to grow up in, and it sounds like you got well-versed in the various barbecue regions that make up the South. So as you were growing up, what did you love to do as a kid?
I grew up really being a bit of a country boy, so my parents both grew up in a very small town in Alabama. So I grew up hunting and fishing. I had the chance to ride motorcycles a lot with my older brother and my dad, and eventually got into racing bicycles. And my sport was baseball up until my senior year of high school.
What position did you play?
Pitcher, short. Yeah, pitcher, shortstop, and left field.
Okay. All right. You still got a good arm?
I don't. The reason I stopped, I've got tendonitis in both of my elbows, so if I go play catch with my son for more than 15 or 20 minutes, I'm nursing an ice pack.
All right. So let's kind of shift from sports. It sounds like you led a very active childhood. So let's talk about mentorship. So as you were growing up and kind of moved into industry, who was your best mentor in the early days of your career?
Great question. I've been blessed, and as I've gotten into the consulting business and the coaching business, I've realized just how blessed I've been. But my very first job was in an Italian pizza restaurant, New York style pizza restaurant, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And the leader there was truly my first non-parental mentor, but it's probably too early in my career to really count that. Maybe on a different conversation, I'll hit on that one. But probably when I started at Nordson Corporation, it was around 2000. But I had a fantastic mentor named Tom. I'm still in touch with him. He's since retired. But just a great coach, father figure, confidant, kicking the butts when I screwed up. He was just an amazing, amazing man. I took so much knowledge and information, and just all I could soak up from that guy, I took with me, and I still apply many of the things he taught me today.
So if you had to pick one that you have tried and put at the top of your list to apply to your leadership approach, what would that be? What did Tom, what do you want to imitate the most when it came to his approach?
Probably just his style of communication. He had a knack of being very warm, but also extremely clear. So, he wasn't a one style of communicator, but I would watch him in different conversations, and depending on who the audience was and what the topic was and what the, should this be somber, should this be upbeat? I think he was able to do it from the hip, just shooting from the hip and come up with this style that was, to me, just spectacular. I'm not as gifted at that, so I have to practice and rehearse, but watching him vary and change his communication style depending on the audience and topic and everything is probably the most important thing that I learned from him.
Mm. Okay. A great early mentor that kind of shaped a lot of your perspective when it comes to leadership. Great person to have in your corner, it sounds. So let's move from that to one final question before we kind of dive into some of your recent observations, Bo. And to our audience, we're interviewing and talking with Bo Gruver, founder and president of the Effective Syndicate. So tell us about your career. So it sounds like you made some pizza, you made some glue machines for production environments. What else? Talk about your career before founding the Effective Syndicate several years ago.
Yeah, so I mean, it just feels like, looking back, it feels like it was all certainly planned out by somebody much smarter than I was. But I started out in a pizza joint, and actually worked in a couple of those as I was in my early teens, in the high school. And then I started working for auto parts companies because I grew up around cars. My dad was a bit of a car nut, and that's a trait that I've adapted from him. Which led me into warehousing. So I was doing a two-step warehouse distribution process for an auto parts company. And then that led me to working at the Coca-Cola company, which was also a warehouse. It's now, they've utilized a 3PL instead of having this a Coke-owned product. And that led me to Nordson, where I started as inventory control manager and left as plant manager. And left there to Rock 10. I started as a master black belt, and I left as director of manufacturing. And then my last step prior to founding the Effective Syndicate was as a director of lean supply chain for Serta Simmons Bedding. So it was pizza just to get started working and earn a little money, and then it was warehousing, and then it was manufacturing, lots of touches in manufacturing. Which led me to the leadership development, which, putting all of that together is kind of the foundation of the Effective Syndicate that we started in 4 years ago, Scott, this May, right now, 4 years ago is when I founded it. So this is my 4-year anniversary.
Congratulations. That is quite a feat. So many businesses don't make it out of the first year, and the consulting space in particular, can be a very difficult one. So it sounds like you were those 4 years proudly, and you should. So congrats, Bo.
Thank you so much.
Yep. All right. So, we go back quite a ways, and I'm really excited, just like I've been able to benefit over, 12, 13, 14 years, whatever it's been, to kind of see the world through your eyes from time to time. Our audience has the same opportunity here. So I know they're in for a treat. So we want to pick your brain on what have been three of your key, we'll call it leadership takeaways from your recent travel. So in our warm-up conversation prior to coming on live here, we kind of identified three areas we wanted to talk about. And the leadoff area is one that we see a lot, several memes a lot in social media. And that's kind of the notion of management versus leadership. So talk to us about that, Bo.
Yeah, so it's so interesting. It was a bit of an epiphany recently. You know, our mantra is we help organizations get to the place where they can effectively lead their people, lead their team, and manage their process, right? That's the goal. And what we see too often is they don't really have a good process, so they're left trying to manage people, which, by the way, sucks for everybody, right? The person who's being managed, it's terrible, and the person trying to manage the other human being is terrible. Everybody's miserable. And so the epiphany was, you know, there's so much about leadership, right? It's YouTube, and it's books, and it's webinars, and it's seminars, and let's go to, you know, the Chick-fil-A LeaderCast, which I absolutely love, but there's so much information about leadership. And I think a lot of organizations are really struggling with just good old-fashioned management. And so I was talking with a client, and we weren't getting the results that we wanted. And I started, you know, asking questions about the process, which is, you know, a big part of what we do in the consulting world. And the answer in this conversation was a little bit shocking, maybe not shocking is not the right word, but it was just very, very enlightening for me, because basically he said, well, you know, we've had this conversation with this individual and we laid out these expectations. And I said, okay, well, you know, what were those expectations? We talked through it. What were the steps that this person should have been taking? And we talked about those. And I said, well, are those working? And he said, well, I'm not really sure that they're taking those steps. I said, okay, so let me get this straight, Steve. You know, Steve is not the real person. I call every fake conversation I have is with Steve. or I used to work with somebody that said Joe Schmuckatelli. So Joe Schmuckatelli. But that sounds derogatory, so I don't mean that. But anyway, Steve, you know, what is it that you expect this person to do? It sounds like you've had this conversation. And you guys have laid out these process steps, but now you're saying that you don't know if those process steps are happening. Why is that? And he said, well, you know, I'm trying to be a hands-off leader, and I expect people to do the right thing, and I know this person, and I trust this person, and, which was all of the right theoretical answers. But if you take a step back and say, all right, I'm not getting the results that I want, and this is true of any facet of any operation, right? If I want to get in shape, but I'm not going to the gym and I'm not eating healthy and I'm not sleeping, it's kind of dumb for me to think I'm going to get in shape that way, right? So I don't remember who said it. I think it might have been W. Edward Deming that said, look, you will get what you inspect, not what you expect. And so we made a lap back around and said, all right, let's talk about how we manage this. You've got inputs, which are these process steps that should be happening. And if you do these process steps, you expect a result. So right now the result isn't working and you don't know what process steps are happening. This is management 101, so let's lay this out. Let's create this conversation. And if we need to, let's put some measures and metrics around the inputs and quit watching so much about the result. You know the result's not what you want. Now let's look at the inputs, because if we're doing all the inputs and the result isn't what we want, then we need to reevaluate what inputs we're doing. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we just have no idea. We're not getting the results that we want, but we don't know why. Are we doing the right stuff? Are we even doing this stuff that we think is happening? And so it led me to think about, you know, maybe one of the things that we ought to be working on, you and I, is, you know, what are the conversations around good management processes? What are the steps around good management techniques to supplement the leadership stuff, because there's millions of things out there about leadership right now, literally millions. And I think somewhere along the way, we've lost this idea that management is very, very good and very, very important for building those operations and those world-class processes.
This episode of Supply Chain Now Radio was brought to you by APICS Atlanta, an association for supply chain management organization. APICS Atlanta provides supply chain thought leadership, networking, and certification opportunities for supply chain professionals. Consider getting involved with APICS Atlanta as a volunteer or general guest. Student memberships are free and the networking opportunities are numerous. Supply chain certification workshops can be delivered at your offices and are also offered through a partnership with Georgia Tech's Supply Chain and Logistics Institute. In 2019, CSCP and CLTD workshops are offered in a 2.5-day boot camp format in June and October. Whether you're interested in better understanding inventory management and planning fundamentals, end-to-end supply chain management concepts, or logistics, transportation, and distribution, APICS Atlanta has something for you. For more information on the workshops, the certifications, or area networking opportunities, check out apicsatlanta.org or send a note to info@apicsatlanta.org.
That's interesting. You know, I think I mentioned the meme that we've all probably have seen on the various social media platforms, and the way it's kind of presented is that, to your point, Bo, is management's all bad, leadership's all good. But what I'm hearing you say is it's not nearly that simple. And while, of course, leadership will always be important, management is still really important too, especially the right style and the effective style of management. Is that right?
Absolutely. And you know, the right way to do this is not to make it like this gotcha thing where I'd make out a list and I'm going to audit somebody, you know, by peering around the corner at them and try to catch them doing something wrong. The right way is to say, you know, let's work on this together. If I'm working with the team, I shouldn't be the one that is developing the process steps, the input steps, the process that we're going to manage. It needs to be jointly developed, right? So, hey, Steve, you're doing this work. What do you think needs to happen? How many of this thing and how many of those things and how many times and how often do we need to do these things? Let's build this together. That gives the employee a chance to buy into the process, and that gives the employee a chance to own that process that they're now going to be responsible for doing and also to some degree measured against. So we all make mistakes in judgment. We all pick things that we think are going to have some kind of impact, and we pick them and we try them and they just don't work. Well, okay, that's not a failure. That's just a learning. I learned that one didn't work. Let me try something else. And I think to your point, leadership has gotten so big and exciting and there's so much about it that we kind of drifted away from good old-fashioned management.
Right. Yep. So for this first observation of yours, if you were to recommend one thing, one action item, one area to take action today to our listeners after they hear this conversation, what would be that for this first management versus leadership nugget?
Very, very simple. I would encourage everyone to pick one thing that they're not, that they don't like the results that they're getting. They don't like the outcome that they have. They don't like some aspect of the result that they want to see happen. And I would encourage them to go then audit the process. And by audit, it should be what should be happening, how often, how many times, which days, what time. There's components of just basic auditing skills. And if they don't know those skills, look them up or reach out to me. But go evaluate your inputs to whatever process you don't like the results you're getting. And it shouldn't just be a conversation with Steve to say, Steve, why isn't this working? Why are you screwing up? That's not the point. What are the process steps that Steve should be doing? Is he doing those? And if we're doing the right steps, if there's a process, let's start there. My guess is more than 50% of the people that try this will learn that they either don't have a process at all or it's really, really bad. Mm. And so the right way to engage then is to evaluate your process, not evaluate Steve, because Steve doesn't even have a chance yet if we don't have a good process for Steve to follow.
Hmm. So pick one area, very targeted area, and take a deep dive to better understand that first as a good starting point.
Absolutely.
Yep. Okay. All right. So let's move from management to money. So let's talk margins. We were talking earlier in the warm-up conversation, Bo, about how many organizations may be operating in the blind. And you've got some specific observations over the last few weeks about kind of that question, you know, where do you make your money? Do you know? So tell us more about that.
Yeah, sure. So, again, talking with a client about sales and operations planning, which is a very hot topic right now in supply chain, and rightfully so. It's aligning the organization cross-functionally on what's happening. And through this conversation, we started talking about the sales team wanted to run this particular ad on a product. And we got into that conversation and said, all right, well, you know, what's your gross margin? And they told me the gross margin. So, what's your gross margin on that, the thing that they were going to run the sale on? And I got this look like I had, you know, four heads, and like they just didn't know. They know their overall gross margin, and they knew to some degree, what makes up the buckets of margin, if you will. But for that particular product that they were looking at pushing out and giving a pretty deep discount on, they couldn't really articulate what that margin was. So then the conversation, why does the sales team want to run a sale on that? Well, it's got a good traction in the market and people are responding well and they're buying it. So you've already got good momentum, but you still don't know, how does that fit into your overall profit margin? Most organizations can tell you their aggregate gross profit margin, but when you start drilling into what makes those margins up, it gets fuzzier and fuzzier, where some of the products may be way ahead of your aggregate gross margin and some of the products may be way lower than the aggregate gross margin. So in the worst case scenario, the sales team gets excited, they start pushing a product that you're already at a low margin and they give a discount. Well, now you're losing money to drive revenue. And I've had this conversation several times, I'm going to say in the last 6 months, and it seems to be there's just a missing piece of our business intelligence that's really not that hard to get to. It's just a matter of let's get smart, guys. Before we run a sale, let's understand what our gross margins are, right? And if we do this right, that gives the operations team time to pull some cost out if they need to improve the process, if they need to tweak the quality of the output of the product if they need to. So there's a lot of alignment that happens from sales and operations planning, but what I see it too often is we're jumping into the middle of the conversation. Sales has already decided or marketing has already decided we want to push this particular item without understanding operationally, is that really a good revenue generator right now? Is that a good margin generator?
Once teams understand where they're making their money and just how much money at the lower level, right, product by product level, we'll call it, you can make a whole lot of better decisions rather than operating all the macro levels. Is that kind of some of what you're sharing here, Bo?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I would argue probably go about it the other way. I would argue that the operations team working with finance should understand where the best margin levels are and feeding that into sales and marketing and say, look, guys, here's our four biggest margin producers. Can we produce something around these guys? Because we're really good at making them and we are killing it on the margin side. Let's go market this thing. Let's go, incent the sales team to go sell these widgets because this is our moneymaker. And too often it feels like the sales and marketing group is leading the organization, even though they don't have maybe as much insight, financially and from a revenue, cost, profitability perspective to know that. It's usually what's prettiest, what has the best packaging, what has the best story, that the sales and marketing guys love to use. So nothing wrong with that. It's just there's a missing piece of insight that should be considered before they start launching a big push to generate that extra revenue.
Fantastic. And you're right. Going back to something you said a few minutes ago, S&OP is extremely hot in the supply chain world right now, and for a variety of reasons. But I would argue that one of those reasons, Bo, and you're probably seeing this, is that you have so much more information and data at your fingertips than, you know, even 5 years, 10 years ago. And if you're able to communicate on both sides of business, you know, sales and operations, obviously, to keep it simple, you can really position the company in a good position to maximize margins and really serve the customer and know what the customer really wants, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Good, good, good. All right, so let's move from margins. We're going to kind of, this third area is going to be a little bit different than the first two, because we're going to kind of be talking about and getting some of your advice on kind of your individual career arc. So, you know, we were talking about your personal bar and where do you have that set. What do you mean by that, Bo?
Yeah, so this one has been under formulation a lot. You know, I get the chance to spend a lot of time coaching people and knowing my own personal journey and how my thinking about my career has evolved over the last 25 years. And by your personal bar, I mean, you know, I still hear people saying things like, well, that's not my job. And, you know, I don't get paid to do that. And I don't get paid to think about those kinds of things. And it's really kind of this just negative perspective that I think is holding a lot of people back. And so for me, right, I started out with some of that kind of thinking. I'm not going to lie. I was young, and, you know, you get programmed by whoever you're getting programmed by in your life. And you come into work with this this attitude that's not yours. It was given to you by somebody, and you're following. Maybe it was your dad. Maybe it was your uncle. Maybe it was your first boss. But you're showing up with these kind of preconceived notions about what is the expectation. And, you know, I was blessed when the first day I worked in the pizza place when I was 15, my dad was driving me to the job, and he said, look, Bo, so I want you to think about something. Look around at what needs to be done and do it. Don't wait to be told. Don't wait for somebody to, you know, create a list of things. Just look around and see what needs to be done and do it. And I was, you know, fortunate to get that advice, but it took a while for me to really understand it. And I think there's some basic requirements, right? So showing up to work, being on time, not being a jerk to your coworkers, those are the bare minimum things. And I think there's this misconceived kind of idea that, well, I'm doing these bare minimum things, therefore I've been here a long time, therefore I should get a raise, and maybe I should get a chance at more responsibility. And what this conversation continues to kind of swirl around as I'm having these conversations is, you know, what are you bringing to the organization? When's the last time you raised your hand to work on a new project? When's the last time you raised your hand to get out of your comfort zone? When's the last time you asked or some additional training, or you wanted to work in a different department? And you bring value to the organization first. Then the organization, if it's well ran, and I do believe most organizations are pretty well ran, will give you those opportunities to grow your responsibility, to make more money, to have a better title, whatever those things that you're wanting in your career. And it's just a little bit backwards a lot. A lot of the time, there's people that just think about I'm going to do the bare minimum, but I expect this organization to give me a raise and more money and more responsibility, but I'm just bringing in what I was told to do.
And so at the core of what you're saying here is really how well you're engaged into the role of the operation, the organization. Because while I think you and I both would say that a big part of engagement is on the company, on leadership, right? They're responsible to engage your employees and make sure the environment is one that really encourages that, right? However, what I'm hearing you talk about, which we don't hear talked about nearly as much, is kind of what is our individual responsibility to engage into our role and engage into our responsibilities in our organization. Is that right?
Yeah, you're hitting it right on the head. You know, John F. Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. And, you know, you and I talk a lot about how much we love this country and being a patriot and all of that great stuff. But it's the same thing. So, yes, I do think it is the leadership's responsibility of an organization to engage their employees. But if an individual is working there and they're providing whatever life that they have through that company, right, they're already getting paid to do what they're doing. It's incumbent upon them to then say, all right, if I want to grow my career, and if you don't want to grow your career, right, this is, it's fine. But I would still encourage people. I think humans are most happy in general when they're striving. And so if I'm an individual contributor, I want to be striving to be a supervisor. I want to be striving to be a manager. If I'm a manager, I want to strive to be a director or senior manager, whatever those things are. And again, I'm not saying everyone should try that. But what I'm saying is, if you want those opportunities, your best bet at getting to them is to put your neck out a little bit and say, I want to do more, and just start doing it. Not because you're going to get more money instantly or because you're going to get a raise instantly. You start doing those things, and I will tell you, in my experience, 99 out of 100 companies will recognize that work, and they will start finding ways to help you grow and develop. Mm. And I think one more thought, Scott. I think this is really, really important for the younger generation. I heard Simon Sinek describing millennials, and he said, look, I don't think millennials are entitled. I think they're impatient. And what we've got to recognize, you know, folks like you and I, Scott, our parents told us to get a good job, stay at the company, work there 40 years and retire. This upcoming generation didn't hear that. My generation, Gen X, hasn't done that, right? I'm 5 years at this company. I'm 9 years at this company because I'm continuing to look for ways to grow myself because that's what's important. Well, this younger generation saw that, number one. And number two, they play video games where, you know, they play for a few hours and they get leveled up. And their avatar has more power or, you know, more whatever. So they're programmed through the video games and through the TV and through the radio and through watching us, there's almost this instant gratification. And so, you know, we've got an opportunity where we can teach these guys to look, you got to do more if you want to have more opportunity. It's not just the employer's responsibility. It is also your responsibility as an employee. And I think that part of the conversation is missing.
Mm. Well, so, back on the engagement piece, one thing I want to throw out there for our listeners, most folks probably are familiar with Harvard Business Review, which is a great resource of a wide variety of leadership perspective and business perspective. And ADP has been compiling their research on engagement as part of a five-part series now, which was just published, I believe, five or six days ago on the Harvard Business Review, and the figure and from their research is 16% of the world's employees are fully engaged at work. Now we've heard different numbers. We've heard numbers as low as 11 or 12%, but they really, to our listeners, check out this really neat research. They've got it kind of chopped up in a wide variety of perspectives where they kind of break it down by country, by role, by nature of position, by industry. And it really generates a lot of thought and ideas as to, you know, how we're missing the boat when it comes to engagement. So you can check that out at hbr.org, and I'm sure it'll be front and center under employee engagement. So great source for a wide variety of ideas related to leadership and business. So, well, Bo, those are three very meaty topics we chose on this installment of Leadership Matters. Before we ask you how listeners can learn more from the Effective Seneca and find you, any final thoughts related to one or these or any of these topics we talked about today?
I think in general the overarching takeaway is there are a ton of smart people out here. And the incomparable Les Brown once said that success leaves clues. So I would encourage all your listeners, and I'm sure you guys are already doing this because you're listening to things like this, but find resources and continue learning, continue your education would be point number one. Point number two is probably the audit, right? So we talk about auditing, a process, right? If something's not producing the results that you want, go audit the process. But the same is true of audit yourself. You know, you talk about the engagement rate of 16%. How engaged are you? And I would argue that that is just a choice. So you can go into work, you can get up in the morning and go, oh crap, it's Monday, I got to go to work, it's going to have a crappy day, I hate my boss, whatever. And you're setting yourself up to be successful in that. Success meaning you're going to have a crappy day, you're going to have a bad day at work, your boss is going to be a jerk, whatever. But there's nothing saying that you can't just choose to go into work and be more engaged. There's nothing saying that you can't just say, you know what, I'm going to go in, I'm going to have an awesome day today. I don't want to have a miserable day. I don't want to be frustrated. I don't want to let these things bother me. I'm going to go look for what needs to be done and find a way of getting it done. That's what I'm going to do. And I think if we can help people recognize that they control that switch, you know, they control that dial of being engaged or not being engaged, we'll have a much happier workforce overall. And that's pretty exciting. And I think there's a huge opportunity that we can help each other.
Huge opportunity. So really appreciate your time today and your perspective. I'm hoping our listeners took away 3 pages of notes as I did. I'm partial though, Bo. So and again, to our audience, we're talking with Bo Gruver, founder and president of the Effective Syndicate. So Bo, if folks want to learn more, where do they go?
Well, I hope, Scott, that they keep coming back and listening to us as we're learning and sharing all this stuff. But other than that, you know, please connect with me on LinkedIn. You can check us out at theeffectivesyndicate.com. Out there, we've got some pretty exciting things. We just started a new series called The Effective Minute, and we're we've got a lot of contributors building out our blog. So these are professional continuous improvement leaders that work with me, and we've got a mountain of information out there, both on the process side, on the leadership side, and on the management side. So lots of resources out there for folks to plug into.
Fantastic. And so listeners, you can learn more insight and observations from the Effective Syndicate team at theeffectivesyndicate.com. And Bo, looking forward to our next installment of the Leadership Matters series right here on Supply Chain Now Radio. So thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much for setting us up and having me, Scott. I look forward to chatting with you as always.
You bet. All right, that was Bo Gruver, founder and president of the Effective Syndicate, one of our valuable sponsors here at the Supply Chain Now Radio. And we are going to wrap up on some upcoming events, as we always do. If you're interested, Bo touched on a lot of different things there, but one of the things he talked about was kind of that continuing to invest in yourself and professional development. And so if you're in supply chain, one of the ways to do that is go out and earn a supply chain management certification. Of course, one of our sponsors here at Supply Chain Now Radio is Apex Atlanta. Apex Atlanta has been serving the Atlanta area for almost 60 years, and it presents one of the leading supply chain management certifications globally. Our next classes within the Atlanta area are going to continue to be at the Georgia Tech Supply Chain and Logistics Institute, and that is going to be the week of June 24th. We've got our CSCP boot camp and our CLTV boot camp. You can learn more at scl.gatech.edu. Next up, Supply Chain Now Radio is a proud media partner for EFT's 3PL and Supply Chain Summit right here in Atlanta, June 10th through the 12th. We've got a home run lineup of speakers. We're going to be broadcasting live thanks to our great friends over at Becker Logistics. You can check them out at beckerlogistics.com. And if you're interested more in the event, either check out EFT.com, which is hosting and facilitating the large summit, or you can send us a note to Scott, S-C-O-T-T, at supplychainnowradio.com, and we'll get you more information. So again, big thanks to our guest today, Bo Gruver, with founder and president of the Effective Syndicate. We appreciate his commitment to making all of us better leaders. Be sure to check out our other upcoming events, replays of our interviews, and other resources at supplychainnowradio.com. Of course, you can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, all the other leading sites where podcasts can be found. And of course, we'd love for you to subscribe so you don't miss anything. On behalf of the entire Supply Chain Now Radio team, this is Scott Luton wishing you a wonderful week ahead, and we'll see you next time on Supply Chain Now Radio. Thanks, everybody.
If you're interested in advancing your career, team building exercises, or simply satisfying your intellectual curiosity, check out an APIC certification workshop at apixatlanta.org.